Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So, as anyone who's listened to this podcast so far knows, in this weird imaginary AI world that I've concocted for myself, Herman is a speaking donkey, and Corin is a sloth. And how you two are brothers, I haven't yet thought about that part of the narrative, but you might have some thoughts about it. I'm sure it's a long and very weird story. But, Corin, we've talked about AI a bunch on this podcast, and I thought let's now and again, thoughts not related to AI do percolate through my brain. And sloths are, how did I get into sloths? Can you say you're into sloths? So it's actually related to AI. Sorry, I can't go 100% off AI, but I'll 95% turned off. When DALL-E came out by ChatGPT, and I was trying it for the first time, I thought to myself, okay, this thing can create images that would be impossible in the real world. So the first thing that popped into my mind to try it out with was a sloth in a supermarket buying leaves, because I imagined how cool would that be to see a picture of a sloth shopping for leaves in a supermarket. And it did a good job. And actually, the ability of AI models to portray sloths has become kind of the litmus test I've used over the years. They used to portray them as really, really gigantic beings, which was kind of funny. Because if I'm not mistaken, sloths were, in old history, very big. Now, one of my life ambitions, you might ask, Daniel, you've created a podcast with a talking sloth. Your website has sloth photos. Tell me when you met a sloth. And I have to say, I haven't yet met a sloth. One of my life ambitions is to travel in order to see the in the flesh. One of the organizations I've stumbled upon in my newfound sloth fondness, and they're just fun to look at. They're ridiculous. They're cute. They're staples of internet culture and YouTube. So, there's a bad day and you need to cheer yourself up. There's worse things you can do than look at photographs or videos of sloths, or so I find. Until you exhaust YouTube's supply of sloth videos, then you've got a problem. So I've been in touch actually with the Sloth Conservation Foundation, who do really amazing work over in Costa Rica. They're tracking sloths in the urban environment. They are putting across crossings for sloths, because when a sloth comes down to defecate, they're at their most vulnerable. And they can be eaten by dogs or electrocuted or, all sorts of horrible things. But I've also come to learn through the Sloth Conservation Foundation's very, very educative content on Facebook and elsewhere that sloths, it's kind of sad. They're exploited. And they don't like being around humans. You never hold a sloth. So this kind of threw a spanner in the works for my great plans to see sloths, because, after learning this in good conscience, I'm, of course, not going to become part of the problem. And but I have to think, how can I have any kind of encounter with a sloth in a way that actually is ethical? So that's where I turn it over to you. I can tell you the Sloth Conservation Foundation actually has very specific guidelines about how close you can come, never to engage in petting a sloth type tourist experiences, all the rest of it. But I figure before I jump on a plane to Costa Rica, which will happen, 100% will happen. This is a non-negotiable life what the kind of parameters of responsible wildlife encounters are in this respect. And corn, I mean, I may have learned a few things about Salas, but I'm sure I've not exhausted the limits of what there is to know. So feel free to throw in any random trivia you may have to educate me. And with that, over to Corin the Sloth and you, Herman, his brother, the Talking Donkey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of My Weird Prompts. We are coming to you, as always, from our home here in Jerusalem. It is January 6th, 2026, and I am here with my brother, Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And Corn, I have to say, this prompt from Daniel really made me smile. Our housemate has been doing some deep dives into digital imagery lately, but it is nice to see him pivoting back to the biological world. Right, he mentioned how he was using generative models to create images of sloths in supermarkets, which is a hilarious mental image, but it sparked a real-world question for him. He wants to know how to actually have an ethical encounter with a sloth, and what the broader parameters are for responsible wildlife tourism. Plus, he is looking for some trivia to round out his education.
It is a perfect topic for us. You know, sloths are often misunderstood as just being lazy or slow, but they are actually evolutionary masterpieces of energy conservation. But before we get into the biology, we should probably address the elephant, or the sloth, in the room. The desire to touch them.
That is exactly where Daniel's head was at. He found the Sloth Conservation Foundation and realized that the very things we find cute about them can actually lead to some pretty harmful behaviors from tourists. So, Herman, when we talk about an ethical encounter, what is the starting point? What is the golden rule?
The golden rule is simple to state but often hard for people to follow, look, but never touch. In the world of wildlife conservation, especially for arboreal mammals like sloths, human contact is almost always a net negative. The Sloth Conservation Foundation, or SLOCO, is very clear about this. They have been leading the charge with the Sloth Selfie Code, and supporting the Costa Rican government's Stop Animal Selfies campaign.
I have seen those hashtags. You are in Costa Rica or Panama, and someone offers you the chance to hold a sloth for a photo. It seems harmless because the sloth looks like it is smiling, right?
That is the big misconception. That smile is not an expression of joy or relaxation. It is actually just the natural shape of their facial structure. A sloth can be absolutely terrified, with its heart rate skyrocketing and its stress hormones peaking, and it will still look like it is having a pleasant afternoon. When humans hold them, it triggers a fight or flight response. But because their entire biology is built for slow movement, they cannot exactly run away. They just freeze. It is a stata tat to it.
So we are essentially misinterpreting their biological stillness as consent or enjoyment. That is a heavy thought. It reminds me of what we discussed back in episode 277-20, when we were talking about AI weights. We often project human-like meaning onto systems or creatures that are operating on a completely different set of internal logic.
That is a great connection. We anthropomorphize them. We see a slow-moving, smiling creature and think, oh, he wants a hug. But in reality, a human picking up a sloth is roughly equivalent to a giant alien picking us up while we are trying to sleep. It is disorienting and physically taxing. Sloths are heterothermic, meaning they have very poor control over their body temperature. Dealing with the stress of a human encounter can actually cause their internal systems to haywire, potentially leading to neurological.
Okay, so if holding them is out, what does a responsible encounter look like? If Daniel goes to Costa Rica tomorrow, how does he do this the right way?
The best way is to see them in the wild from a distance with a certified guide. You want to look for the Sloth Friendly Network label. This is a certification for businesses and tour operators that follow strict ethical guidelines. This means no baiting the animals with food, no touching, and maintaining a respectful distance of at least 2 to 3 meters.
2 to 3 meters seems like a good rule of thumb for most wildlife, actually. It gives them enough space to feel like they have an exit route.
Exactly. And it is not just about the physical distance. It is about the environment. An ethical encounter happens in the animal's natural habitat, not in a cage or a roadside attraction. If someone is walking around a town with a sloth on a leash or in a basket, that is a massive red flag. Those animals are often taken from the wild illegally, and they usually do not survive long in captivity because their diet is so specialized.
You mentioned their diet and their metabolism. I think this is a good spot to dive into some of that trivia Daniel was asking for. I have always been fascinated by how they actually process food. It is not like our digestive system at all, is it?
Not even close. Sloths are folivores, meaning they eat mostly leaves. But leaves are incredibly difficult to digest and provide very little energy. To compensate, sloths have a multi-chambered stomach, similar to a cow, but even slower. It can take anywhere from 11 to 30 days for a sloth to digest a single meal, with the average being about 16 days.
16 days? That is incredible. So they are essentially walking or hanging compost bins.
Pretty much. Their stomach makes up about 30% of their total body weight. And because the process is so slow, they have to be very careful about their body temperature. If they get too cold, the bacteria in their gut that helps digest the leaves will stop working, and the sloth can actually starve to death even with a full stomach. They actually have to bask in the sun just to get their digestion moving.
That is a terrifying thought. It really highlights how delicate their balance is. It also explains why they move so slowly. They literally do not have the calories to spare for a sprint.
Right? They move at an average speed of about 0.24 kilometers per hour. But here's a piece of trivia that surprises people. They are actually excellent swimmers. When they are in the water, they can move 3 times faster than they do on land. They use a kind of breaststroke and can hold their breaststroke and can hold their breath for up to 40 minutes underwater by slowing their heart rate to 1/3 of its normal pace.
Wait, 40 minutes? Most humans can barely manage 2. Why do they need to hold their breath for that long?
It is partly an escape mechanism and partly just a way to travel between patches of forest in flooded areas. It is another example of their extreme efficiency. And speaking of efficiency, they have another secret power, their necks. While most mammals, including us and even giraffes, have 7 neck vertebrae, some species of sloths have up to 10. This allows them to swivel their heads 270 degrees, giving them a massive field of vision without having to move their bodies anterograde.
I want to go back to the parameters for responsible wildlife encounters more broadly, because Daniel asked about the general rules too. We talked about sloths specifically, but what are the universal signs that a wildlife tour is ethical versus exploitative?
That is a vital question, especially in 2026, where ecotourism is a huge industry. First, look at the focus of the tour. Is the focus on the animal's well-being and education, or is it on the tourist's entertainment and photo opportunities? If a tour promises a guaranteed interaction or a photo with the animal, that is a bad sign. True wildlife encounters are unpredictable.
Right, because wild animals do not follow a schedule. If they are always there and ready for a photo, they are probably being coerced or fed.
Exactly. Second, check their conservation credentials. Do they partner with local nonprofits? Do they contribute a portion of their profits to habitat restoration? Ethical operators are usually very transparent about where their money goes. Third, look at the group size. Large, noisy groups are incredibly stressful for most wild animals. An ethical tour will usually limit the number of people to a small, manageable group that can move quietly through the forest.
And what about the behavior of the guides? I imagine that is a huge factor.
It is the most important factor. A good guide should be an educator, not just a spotter. They should be explaining the biology and the threats the animals face, like habitat fragmentation or power lines. Speaking of power lines, that is a huge issue for sloths in urbanizing areas. They see wire and think it is a vine, and the results are often fatal. Ethical operators will often be involved in projects to insulate those lines or build sloth crossings.
Sloth crossings. That is what Daniel mentioned too. These are essentially ropes or structures that allow them to cross roads or gaps in the canopy without coming down to the ground.
Yes, and coming down to the ground is the most dangerous thing a sloth can do. This leads to my favorite piece of sloth trivia, and it is a bit gross, but it is fascinating. Sloths only poop once a week, and they come down to the forest floor to do it.
I have heard about this. It seems so counterintuitive. Why would an animal that is so vulnerable on the ground take the risk of climbing down just to use the bathroom? They could just let it go from the branches like every other arboreal animal.
It is one of the great mysteries of biology, but the leading theory involves a symbiotic relationship with moths. There is a specific species called the sloth moth that lives in their fur. When the sloth goes down to the ground to defecate, the moths lay their eggs in the waste. When the larvae hatch, they feed on the waste, turn into moths, and fly up to find a sloth to live on.
Okay, but what does the sloth get out of that? It sounds like the moths are getting a free ride and a nursery.
The theory is that the moths help fertilize the growth of algae in the sloth's fur by increasing nitrogen levels. If you look at a sloth in the wild, they often have a greenish tint. That is actual algae growing on them. The algae provides camouflage, but recent research shows the sloths actually eat the algae. It is a lipid-rich, highly digestible supplement to their poor diet. So, the sloth risks its life once a week to maintain this tiny, portable garden on its back.
That is mind-blowing. It is a whole world living on their backs. It really puts the weird in my weird prompts. It also makes the idea of a human touching them even worse. We have oils on our skin, perfumes, sunscreens. We are basically dumping chemicals into a delicate ecosystem when we pet them.
Precisely. You are disrupting a biological balance that has evolved over millions of years. And speaking of millions of years, did you know that sloths used to be giants?
Oh, the Megatherium. I remember seeing a skeleton of one in a museum once. They were the size of elephants, right?
Yes. They could reach 6 meters in length and weigh several tons. They lived in the Americas until about 12,000 years ago. They were ground dwellers because, obviously, no tree could hold a multi-ton sloth. The modern tree sloths we see today are actually quite distant relatives of those giants. They evolved to be small and arboreal as a way to occupy a different ecological niche.
It is amazing to think about how they transitioned from these massive ground shakers to these quiet, slow-moving canopy dwellers. It shows how successful the slow and steady strategy really is. It is not about laziness. It is about extreme specialization.
Exactly. They are basically living on the absolute edge of what is metabolically possible for a mammal. They are even twice as strong as a human relative to their size when it comes to their grip strength.
So, when Daniel is looking for these parameters for responsible encounters, he is really looking for ways to respect that edge. I think we should talk a bit more about the greenwashing aspect you mentioned. In 2026, every company claims to be eco-friendly. How do you spot the fakes?
One big indicator is the use of animals in marketing. If the website is covered in photos of tourists holding or being very close to the animals, that is a red flag. Another thing to look for is the sanctuary label. The word sanctuary is not regulated in many countries. Anyone can put up a sign that says sloth sanctuary and then charge people to hold the animals.
That is deceptive. So a real sanctuary would probably not allow you to touch the animals at all.
So one of Asperio's goals is to release the animal back into the wild. If an animal gets used to humans, it can never be released because it loses its natural fear. If you visit a real sanctuary, you will likely see the animals through a fence or from a distance, and the staff will be very strict about noise. You can also check the Slowly Panic Guide, which is the gold standard for sloth-friendly tourism.
That makes total sense. It is the difference between a zoo and a hospital. You do not go into a hospital to pet the patients.
That is a perfect analogy. And for the animals that cannot be released due to permanent injuries, a good sanctuary will provide them with a habitat that mimics the wild as much as possible, with plenty of space and minimal human interference.
You know, we have talked a lot about the physical aspects, but I am curious about the psychological side of this. Why do you think humans have such a strong urge to touch wild animals, especially something like a sloth?
I think it comes from a place of genuine wonder, but it is filtered through a consumerist mindset. We live in an age where we feel like we can possess an experience if we can capture it and touch it. A photo of a sloth in a tree is beautiful, but a photo of us holding a sloth feels like a trophy. It is a way of saying, I was here and I had this unique connection.
But it is a false connection. It is a one-way street where the human gets a thrill and the animal gets a cortisol spike.
Right. True connection with nature comes from observation and understanding, not from physical possession. When you sit quietly and watch a sloth move through the canopy, you start to notice the way it tests each branch, the way it blends into the shadows. That is a much deeper experience than a 5-second photo op.
I agree. It requires patience, which is something we are often short on these days. It is fitting that to truly appreciate a sloth, you have to slow down to their pace.
Exactly. It is a lesson in mindfulness. If you are rushing through the forest, you will never see a sloth. They are the masters of being invisible. You have to stop, be still, and let your eyes adjust to the subtle movements of the forest.
Let's talk about the specific types of sloths. Daniel mentioned 3-toed versus 2-toed. Is there a big difference between them?
There is. And here's a bit of trivia that even some experts get wrong. All sloths actually have 3 toes on their back feet. The names 2-toed and 3-toed actually refer to the number of fingers on their front limbs. So technically, we should call them 2-fingered and 3-fingered sloths.
Wait, really? That is a great distinction.
Yes. The 2-fingered sloths are generally larger, more aggressive, and more nocturnal. They have a slightly more varied diet and can sometimes eat small insects or lizards. The 3-fingered sloths are smaller, have that iconic dark mask around their eyes, and are strictly folivores. They are also the ones that are more commonly seen during the day.
I did not know 2-fingered sloths could be aggressive. I cannot imagine a sloth being aggressive in the traditional sense.
Well, it is all relative, but a 2-fingered sloth can move surprisingly fast if it feels threatened, and they have very sharp teeth and long claws. They will hiss and swipe at you. It is a good reminder that they are wild animals, not teddy bears.
Those claws are no joke. They are basically built-in hooks.
They are. And their grip is incredibly strong. A sloth's muscles are designed for hanging, not for pushing. Their tendons are arranged so that their default state is closed. They actually have to exert effort to open their claws. This means that a sloth can stay hanging from a branch even after it has died.
That is morbid but fascinating. It is like they are locked into the trees. It really emphasizes how much they belong there. When we bring them down for our own amusement, we are literally pulling them out of their biological safe zone.
Exactly. And that safe zone is shrinking. Habitat loss is the biggest threat they face. As forests are cleared for agriculture or development, sloths are forced into smaller and smaller patches of trees. This makes them more vulnerable to predators like jaguars and harpy eagles.
This is where the work Daniel was looking at becomes so important. The reforestation projects and the sloth crossings are trying to reconnect those fragments.
Yes, and as travelers, we can support that by choosing operators that invest in those specific projects. In 2026, we have more tools than ever to verify these things. We can use AI tools to help us parse through the greenwashing language in brochures.
It is funny you mention AI tools. Remember back in episode 273 when we talked about the 2026 problem of AI tool sprawl? Using AI to audit the ethical claims of travel companies is actually a great use case.
It really is. You can feed a company's sustainability report into a model and ask it to look for inconsistencies. It is a way of holding these companies accountable.
So if we were to summarize the Daniel's Guide to Ethical Slothing, what would the bullet points be?
Number 1. Never touch or hold a sloth. If a tour offers this, walk away. Number 2. Maintain a distance of at least 3 meters. Number 3. Look for the Sloth Friendly Network certification or evidence of partnership with reputable groups like Slow Coco. Number 4. Keep noise to a minimum and never use flash photography. And number 5. Support habitat protection. The best way to save sloths is to save the trees they live in.
That is a solid list. And for the trivia fans, we have the 16-day average digestion, the swimming speed, the symbiotic moths and algae they actually eat, the 10-neck vertebrae, and the secret of their 2-versus-3 fingers.
And don't forget the giant ground sloths. It is always good to remember that the little guys we see today come from a very long and impressive lineage.
I think Daniel will be happy with that. It is a lot to chew on, much like a sloth with a tough leaf.
Ha! Hopefully it doesn't take him 30 days to digest all of this information. But honestly, the fact that he is asking these questions is such a good sign. It shows that the awareness is growing. People are moving away from the animal as a prop phase and into the animal as a neighbor phase.
Animal as a neighbor. I like that. Especially here in Jerusalem, where we have our own unique urban wildlife. It is all about coexisting and respecting boundaries.
Exactly. Whether it is a sloth in Costa Rica, or a gazelle on the outskirts of Jerusalem, the principles are the same. Respect the distance, protect the habitat, and appreciate the weirdness from afar.
Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today, or a lot of canopy, I should say. This has been a great deep dive.
It really has, and I hope our listeners find this useful for their own travels. Wildlife tourism can be a force for good, but only if we are intentional about it.
Absolutely. If you enjoy the show and want to help us reach more people, please consider leaving a review on your favorite podcast app or on Spotify. It really does make a massive difference for independent shows like ours.
It really does. We love hearing from you all, and if you have your own weird prompts, you can always head over to myweirdprompts.com and use the contact form there.
Well, this has been episode 278 of My Weird Prompts. I am Herman Popperberry. And I am Corn. Thank you for joining us in our corner of Jerusalem. We will be back next week with more questions, more trivia, and probably more deep dives into things you never knew you needed to know.
Until then, keep it weird and keep it ethical.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.